welcome to the Off the Charts Football Podcast. I'm Matt Manicheri, former NFL scout and now of Sports Info Solutions, joined by Aaron Schatz, the godfather of football analytics and the founder of Football Outsiders. Today, we have two very special guests joining us, along with, as always, our producer, Justin Stein. First of all, we've got Neil Stratton from Inside the League. We've had Neil on the podcast before. There's nobody more plugged in with all of the goings-on in the National Football League than Neil. And especially in this draft process time, there's nobody more connected to all the scouting community, the agent community, and oftentimes the prospects themselves. So we're excited to have a conversation with Neil just about how everything's been affected leading up to the draft. And then we're going to circle around and have Nathan Cooper. He's going to be with us the whole time, but then we're going to focus in on what he's been doing on YouTube, the SIS Film Breakdowns, a new series that he started putting out where he's going over different players and breaking down their games, their strengths, their weaknesses of some prospects, some big names like Joe Burrow and some smaller under the radar guys that we'll get into. So first things first, Aaron, how are you doing this week?
I'm stuck inside like everybody else in America, so I'm doing okay, but no better or worse than anyone else, I guess.
And Coop, how are you holding up?
Everything's going well. It's at least a nice day here, so maybe get out for a walk here in a little bit.
And then, Neil, you're down in Texas. What's going on down there?
I think it's a little rain today, but it's really been pretty nice for the last two or three weeks. It's frustrating to have to kind of stay home and not be able to get out and enjoy it.
Yeah, I think we're all sharing that frustration, hopefully staying safe. But that's a good segue into talking about this whole process and how things have been weird. I know you at Inside the League have been doing some very different things to try to help get everybody through this process. There's a lot of information that's usually coming out this time of year that's just not flowing right now. So I know you've been trying to do everything that you can do to try to keep things kind of flowing along as we head towards the draft 2 weeks from today. What can you tell us about that?
Well, Matt, as you know, typically March and April, especially the first maybe week and a half of April, are devoted to pro days. And about the first half of April, you get about a third of all the schools have their pro days. But the last 2 weeks of March, as well as that first week of April, is when all the heavyweights, the LSUs, the Alabamas, the North Carolinas, whatever, are having their pro days. It's very heavily weighted more towards the end of the month. Well, right around the 14th is when the NFL started announcing suspending operations and the school started following suit and the lockdowns began and what have you. That left about two-thirds of the draft class that was unable to go to do their pro day. Now, are all those kids the kind of kids that you're going to read about, see in mock drafts and, you know, hear about and what have you? No. But the reason you have pro days is so that NFL teams can kind of go out and vet those players. And Matt, obviously I'm not telling you or any of y'all anything you don't already know, but a lot of the people that are fans don't really kind of recognize that and realize that. So given the fact that there are about 1,800 kids that sign with agents, 320-odd players go to the combine, then you've got about another 600 that go to an all-star game. NFL teams at least had a bite on about 1,000 players from this draft class. Now, with about 1,800 signing with agents, that left about 800 players that if they didn't attend a pro day and didn't get that workout in, they're lost. They're vanished. They're essentially not on the radar screen for NFL teams. So we saw an opportunity to try to go in and help the agents that we work with, the scouts that we work with, in doing that vetting process. So our first move was when they go to these pro days, and again, Matt, not telling you if you don't know, they have something called the APT Coalition. That's essentially so that when the Dolphins go down and work out kids at Bethune-Cookman, but they don't have anyone in North Dakota State, but the Seahawks do, they kind of trade their information. So all the contact information, the agent information, and as well as the height, weight, 40, and what have you. So the first thing we did was we set up a Google form, which allowed agents to come in and put all their players' information in, their contact information, as well as the agent information. We got about 350 to 400 players that way. But we knew that wasn't going to be enough, so we started trying to work with agents to try to set up ex-scouts, guys that had run pro days before, that NFL teams had actually employed, to go out and run pro days for them. We've had a tremendous amount of success with that. Now, obviously, the number of players we've actually had it to help work out is maybe 100. That's not a lot, and the 100's probably on the high side, but at least it's an effort to try to help teams do that. And we've had a lot of teams reach out to us and say, listen, I'm seeing all this crap on social media about this trainer that says a kid ran a 4.2. I'm seeing all this stuff about an agent saying, oh, this my guy did this, this, and this. I don't want to hear about that, but I do trust this guy that I used to work with the Falcons, or this guy that I used to work with the Browns, or whatever. And got a network of about 13 former scouts that are out there running pro days, primarily in the Sun Belt, Atlanta, Dallas, Miami, what have you. And they've been able to provide that information to teams, and at least it's a start on trying to get validated, verified times, heights and weights, three cone times, bench reps, what have you, that might not otherwise have taken place. So we've been trying to do that to the degree that we could. It's kind of winding down now, especially now that we're 2 weeks out from the draft, but we've had success with that. It's been pretty exciting and gotten a lot of good feedback from the people that we've tried to help.
I want to just try to unpack a few things you just said there, because that was a whole lot. And I want to try to put that 100 players, about 100 players that you're getting workouts on that wouldn't have had workouts in perspective just a little bit more. So you talked about the APT system. And what's really important there, and anybody who's read the SIS Football Rookie Handbook will know, is for the height and weight, we'll either have an E next to their name or we'll have a V. That's either estimated or verified. And that's the exact same way that teams look at it. And you only get a V if you've got an NFL scout that was responsible for those measurements, because we all vet each other. So that's kind of at the core of that APT system. And now what Neil's done is he said, hey, we've got 14 guys that have already been vetted and verified, and they're trusted by their colleagues or former colleagues, you know, this network around the league. So we can trust all those times and get those out there. So that's that system. And to put that 100 players in a perspective, you said 1,800 players signed. Maybe about 1,000 of those are guys that like are legitimately have a shot, between guys that make, you know, guys that make all-star games, about 1,000, you're saying about those in total, with just over 300 that make the combine, right? We only have 284 players in the Football Rookie Handbook. Only, I think, 256 players get drafted every year, if I'm doing my math right off the top of my head. So that next 100 players that we're going to get workouts on, those are players that a lot of times are going to get drafted. Those are players that a lot of times scouts are wishing they got a combine invite so that we could have gotten an accurate time on them. Yeah. And what you were saying early about those being later, a lot of times the bigger schools have later pro days because they want to give the guys more of a chance to train and put up their best numbers at those events. So this confluent of factors has been sort of crazy, but I've been keeping track because what you've been able to do, I think, has taken that number of 320 guys that got invited to the combine, and now we're up over 400 guys. And really, when you start to think about it, 1,000 guys have a shot. The top 500 guys have a really good shot. So those guys that we're missing are colossal. So that's amazing that you guys have had the ability to do that and mobilize and keep safe for everybody. So that's phenomenal.
Well, I appreciate it, Matt. I mean, it's, you know, it's a labor of love, and we're trying to help everyone that we can. We feel like this is a kind of a confluence of factors where we can help the agent, we can help the scout, we can help the kid. And, you know, I think there's a couple points to be made. Number one, every kid that's worked out hasn't gone out and blazed a 4.3. You know, there have been times when we've asked an agent to coordinate a pro day, their kid went out and kind of crapped the bed. He didn't help himself, and yet they went to a lot of work and a lot of expense, frankly, to put all this together. That's number one. Another point to make, our scouts are essentially proctoring these workouts. These players often go to social media, and I don't want to say that they lie, but maybe they kind of cook their numbers a little bit. Matt, as you know, a 4.49 and a 4.4 are not the same, and yet you're getting a lot of kids that are saying, well, I went out and ran 4.4. Well, the teams that I've spoken to, and there's about a half dozen that I speak to regularly about these numbers, say, I don't want to hear from the kid, and I don't want to hear from the agent, and God knows I don't want to hear from the trainer. I'll talk to your scout that I know, and I'll get the numbers that way. Sometimes the scouts will shoot a picture of their notebook. They'll text it to us. We'll text it back to our contact with the teams. But one way or another, they see the scouts as someone, as people who have had skin in the game, don't want to ruin relationships, and have pride in their work.
from my perspective, a normal year as a scout, I'm not looking at any numbers that aren't verified by other scouts. It's just whatever Twitter numbers, high school coaches, anybody coming out the woodwork, even the college coaches, you might go in and talk to the strength coach and he'll tell you a guy's going to run 4.35 and he runs 4.55. Sure. So, I mean, I don't trust any of that stuff. Maybe you're having to take a little bit more of that information in this year that you really don't want to. But I mean, these verified times, it's just, it's night and day in terms of the value of the information.
Well, I agree, Matt. And I think, again, I think there's a lot of fans that don't kind of recognize that, but it's a really important point to make. And, you know, it goes back to when you're talking about the E's and the V's. That's a very important factor. And, you know, I got to say, I've been really impressed by the professionalism and the pride that these guys have taken with the numbers they've gathered. They, you know, they don't have a dog in the hunt. And I think that's one reason why they are trustworthy. But I think even if they did, again, they've been vetted, I guess, because they've worked for NFL teams. And I'm hopeful that some of these guys will get back in the league on the strength of work that they've, you know, done with agents, players, what have you, over the last 2-3 weeks.
So we talked earlier about, you know, the fact that, I mean, there's more kids invited to the combine than there are draft picks. And then we've got these other 100 kids who are having these verified pro days on their own. And then all the other kids who are basically just exist at film at this point. They never had pro days. They don't have they don't have workout numbers of any kind. Do you think having these verified times helps those kids become more priority undrafted free agents? Because my biggest question about how this year is going to work is how undrafted free agency is going to work after the draft is over. Like, usually there's just a slam of guys getting signed, like, immediately after the draft is over. And I don't know if that's going to work the same this year.
I don't either. You know, you're looking at about, you know, the math is, to make it easy, you're looking at about 250 kids get drafted and then about another 250 to get signed afterwards in the UDFA process, which used to take about – primarily took about 2 hours after the draft. And then was mostly over with, not completely, but mostly over with. And then
80% in those first 2 hours.
Then you're looking at some teams choose to bring in another 10 to 15 guys that are as on a tryout basis to come to the rookie mini camp and run around in shorts, and maybe one guy gets a UDFA deal. We're looking at no tryouts. I mean, again, this is all written in pencil because who knows what's going to happen in the next 30 days, but presuming there are no rookie mini camps, I don't know how you run a tryout process. I presume that if we're not seeing football until June and we're really getting into maybe some late OTAs and then right into camps, I don't know how you have time to fool with the tryout guys. That's another, again, if that's 100, that's, let's say 10 per team, that's another 300 guys that would at least got a chance to go in, put a helmet on, or run around in team shorts that aren't going to get that opportunity.
That rookie mini camp's canceled. So that usual protocol that you have where guys can come in, you might have just two or three guys end up getting a shot at training camp from that rookie camp.
Right.
That's all gone for now and probably not coming back.
And, I mean, are most of those guys going to make it? Of course not. But you still get a Malcolm Butler, a Damar Dotson, the odd guy who have a nice NFL career that only made it because they went through the tryout process and then got a job. Now,
and then any rookie onboarding, sorry to cut you there, just also any rookie onboarding that happens at those mini camps, that's all gone. We've all onboarded at jobs before. Sure. If you're coming in with your class of guys, that's going to be eliminated, and they're going to have to absorb that into the beginning of training camp this year. So that's another thing to keep an eye on. You might put a priority on intelligence and some off-field sort of bulletproof character guys might go a little bit higher in this draft for that reason.
Sure. But at the end of the day, Aaron, kind of answer your question more, you know, you've got to populate a 90-man roster. You're going into the offseason, you've got about 50, 60 guys by the time you've added your futures deals and the guys you already had on the roster. Now you draft another, you know, 6-7 guys. Now you're around 60, 70 guys. You're still gonna sign your 10 to 15 undrafted free agents to have on your roster. So it's still gonna take place. I guess the question is, how do you vet those guys? How do you decide who you sign and who you don't? And I think you're going to have some teams that essentially scrap all the numbers, all the pro day stuff, and they try to go strictly to film. And then you're going to have the guys that kind of try to do a little bit of both. But you're not going to have that network of 2,000 guys that worked out from March 1 till April 9th or whatever that might have lit the lamp that you didn't even know about. Guys that, you know, you look at their workout numbers, you go back and look at the film, they check out, now you do want to sign them. I don't think we all, any of us know exactly how that 2 hours after the draft are going to be affected, which guys are going to get chances because there's been more film watching, which guys are not going to get chances because they didn't get to go out and run. We might not know for 4 or 5 years if the – we might find out in 4 or 5 years the process was improved by all this. I mean, it's very much up in the air, and it's, you know, for geeks like me that really love examining the process and kind of how things get done, it's really pretty fascinating.
Yeah, that's a great kind of tie-in. Coop, I wanted to ask you, as we put together the Football Rookie Handbook every year, we actually love that it's a February board, that we don't get any of these numbers, that we just worry about the film. I'm wondering, in what ways do you feel like that's an advantage for us, and in what ways do you feel like, you know, obviously we'd want to have more information, but it, like to Neil's point, how does that help us actually get better by maybe eliminating some of that noise?
I mean, to me, a lot of the stuff that you really see, you know, on game day is what you saw from the film. And as scouts, you know, as you know, we take everything from what we see on film, and we really take a little from what we actually get from the combine and pro days and all of those numbers when guys are running out in shorts. So as a scout, I think it really helps because now you really have to be good at your, at breaking down your film, at really watching the film and gathering all of that. Instead of really getting bombarded by, hey, this guy ran a 4.3, this guy ran a, you know, a 4.9, something like that.
You also can't use it as really a crutch.
Good. Yeah, exactly. But it can go both ways. So, you know, maybe this is going to help teams in really being able to evaluate the film a little bit more and really taking that more into stock than what they have previously.
Yeah, I love, you know, I would drive me crazy sometimes that we'd spend so much time as scouts, and as scouts, I feel like you get a really good feel for who the undrafted free agents that you might be interested in are. And yet, because you're not devoting resources to this, a lot of times the way that the decision makers approach undrafted free agency is give me height, weight, speed. What's the 40 time on the card for a corner? You know, how big is this defensive tackle? What, you know, stuff like that. Just the physical traits that you go by. And I'm excited about it. You know, as a scout, I would be excited to not have that and to have it be more reliant on scouting. That said, to go back to Aaron's original question, how does this play forward? I think where there's more ambiguity, which there is because we don't have all these different numbers, I think that teams are going to be less willing to spend a lot of money on a guy in terms of the signing bonus, whatever sort of guarantees they're willing to give to people, things like that. And then I think looking forward, there'll be more movement whenever we start again in July, August, whatever it is, hopefully. I think there'll be more movement at that very front end of training camp because people aren't going to be as locked in on these prospects. They're going to want to work them out. I think there'll be a lot of free agents at that time. There'll probably be more people that are unsigned at that time relative to a normal year. And there'll be an opportunity to have those guys come into your facility and see them run and have your scouts work them out. And there'll be some bottoms of rosters that are getting filled out that way throughout the beginning of training camp. And then just talking to one of the teams that we work with earlier this week, I can tell you they are incredibly worried about injuries for the start of this season. Training camp is always the terrible time for injuries. We haven't had all these players under our watch for all this time, and they come back and they, you know, they're accelerating up and pushing their bodies too hard. This year is going to be bonkers, I think, as far as that goes, especially if you have unsigned guys that are trying to stay in track shape so they can run a 40-yard dash. They have to run their 40-yard dash, then they get signed, and then they start practicing. It could be a real mess when we get back going again.
Matt, also, you know, physicals are a big issue. You got 325 guys that teams have bulletproof physicals on based on going to the combine. There's another, you know, again, 200 guys that typically would have gone to camp that they won't really know what they have until they show up.
Right.
Without these in-person visits to take place, there's a lot of work that gets done there. So there's just so many variables. And again, for people like us to kind of follow the way the league runs, it's really kind of interesting to see how this is all going to play out.
Would you guys agree with the idea that's been bandied about that because of how this is going to work this year, it's going to be harder for guys from smaller schools, especially the smaller school guys who didn't get invited to the combine or maybe didn't get invited to All-Star games to you know, when teams are looking to fill out their undrafted free agent at the end of that 90-man roster, they're going to go with what they know and what they've seen. And what they've seen is a lot of film from FBS schools and not a lot of film from, you know, random FCS and Division II schools.
I generally agree with that, Aaron. I think that you're looking for proven commodities, and essentially college football is a funnel. And the guys that get spit out and go to FBS schools are the ones that generally are going to be more, you know, products of more proven weight programs and strength programs, and obviously they played on a higher level. I think it is fair to say that this is a bad year to be a small school guy. Again, we'll find out for sure. We'll know, and I guess in 2 or 3 months if that's borne out or not. But I don't like my chances if I'm a kid from a small school off the beaten path that really was counting on being able to go to my league and my conference's pro day, show out, and hopefully give people a chance to kind of get a better look at me and see me. Now, again, these kids that went to All-Star games that are from small schools have a much better chance than the ones that didn't. There are some teams that, you know, I work with a college gridiron showcase in Dallas. We bring in about 300 kids. There are some teams that say, well, we didn't have them on our screen at all. They weren't on our radar screen at all. Not to say necessarily that these guys went in and won a job or won a place in a camp, but at least they got a chance. They didn't get a pro day, but at least they went to an All-Star game where they got to, Scott got to see them up close. They've got a much better chance than the guys that were just going to go run and hope for the best. So
you get measured at those All-Star games also. So you don't get a 40-yard dash, but you do get the height, weight, hand size, arm length, all that stuff.
Absolutely right.
One thing that I kind of want to tie in, you know, everything that we've talked about here is how do we really think that this is going to change the evaluation process moving forward with the pandemic that kind of went on? How is this going to change everything, you know, in the next few years?
I don't know, Nathan. I could see that to be where maybe pro days become de-emphasized. Maybe people begin to watch more film. Maybe they kind of focus on those kind of things more so than they used to. I don't know if maybe things start getting moved up closer. Maybe we move the draft closer. I don't know. There's so many variables here. It's really hard to say. I mean, y'all might have a more informed opinion on it than I do.
I wonder if it means that we go back to fewer guys skipping the combine, because at least the combine, if you're there, you know it's going to happen. There's no chance of it being canceled if you're there already. You know, a lot of guys who didn't run at the combine, didn't do drills at the combine, they were planning on waiting for pro day, and then pro day didn't happen.
So, Kuba, I think this is a win for any team that's doing things progressive-minded and for the general arch of history towards progressive-minded ideas. I think that just like we look at in our office, you know, me and you, we go into the same office every day for work, and we haven't been able to do that lately, but we're finding ways that we've been able to be really productive working from home. We've, you know, you conceived and started making these YouTube videos that we're going to talk about later, where you're breaking down all the prospects. And that's something that if we were doing the regular day-to-day in the office, we might not have come up with, but that's actually something that we're probably going to take out of this and realize, hey, whether we're in the office, out of the office, working from home, working from wherever, that's something that we got better at, and let's use that. So I think the same way that this is forcing us to forget about, hey, I don't believe that working from home is as productive as working in an office where people can see each other day to day. Well, guess what? Now everybody's working from home, and there are a whole lot of CEOs and people like that are seeing that, you know what? There are some situations where this is more productive to do it this way. So I think all of those sorts of things, I think that relying on height, weight, and speed, I think people are going to realize how stupid relying on just height, weight, and speed to draft undrafted free agents or to sign undrafted free agents is. I think people are going to be like, hey, wait a minute, we got rid of that information and we started relying on other information and we got better at this in certain ways. And figuring out which of those ways helped you get better and which of those actually didn't help you and you'd want to actually go back to the old way where you can a little bit more. So I think all of those sense, and then going back just a conversation ago, thinking about, you know, what do you do this year? I think you're right, Neil, that teams are going to be risk averse and that they're going to go and with the known quantities more this year because they don't have the pro days and they don't have the information and it hurts small school guys, to Aaron's question. But I also think if I'm really being a money ball guy here, like I pretend to be, then don't I want to think about that as a market inefficiency, right? If everybody's ignoring those guys this year, if I can do a little bit of extra work to try to identify the guys that are actually worthwhile from there, maybe I end up with some really good players. Maybe I also crap out a bunch of times and, you know, I fire some darts that just miss. But maybe if I hit a couple bullseyes, what are we trying to do in undrafted free agency anyway, right? So I think it's an opportunity time as much as it's a difficult time. And there are new ways because we had a relatively efficient market, you know, whatever sort of efficiency the market was, it's been shook up now. So there are going to be opportunities to exploit market inefficiencies that are created by this. So that part of it excites me.
I think one more thing, Matt, I believe that after this year, we might see a hard cap on the number of Zoom meetings you can have with kids. Hard cap on how many visits, in-person visits. Why doesn't it stand to reason that the competition committee would also say, well, listen, you can only have this number of Zoom, which I think is kind of dumb, but that tends to be the way the competition committee thinks. And so I guess so that nobody has any unfair advantages, I could see that happening, maybe.
Yeah, I think they've been changing the rules on almost a day-by-day basis on the teams this year, as far as I understand it. So can't be fun there. All right, Neil, anything else that we should be, that maybe we're not thinking about, just with your being plugged into the prospects themselves, the agents, the scouts? What are the scouts that you talk to doing right now? How are they doing their meetings? How are they getting ready for that draft day?
Kind of like what we're doing right now. A lot of meetings, a lot of online work, a lot of stay-at-home kind of stuff. And I know, you know, it's funny because in our circles, we talk a lot about the teams that have the really younger scouting staffs, and they kind of try to centralize their decision-making, the Patriots model, what have you. Those are probably the teams that are really at a strict advantage right now, because those, I'm presuming, those younger scouts are probably a lot more accepting of this kind of model, whereas the guys with the more gray-haired staff, where they're leaning more on them to actually make evaluations and talk about players and tell them if they can make a team or not, I presume, and I don't mean to be biased towards them or anything, but they're probably a little bit finding these new platforms a little bit unwieldy. Maybe the ones that are a little more centralized in their decision-making, again, kind of that Patriots model, are going to have an advantage because they don't have to incorporate as many people into the decision-making process as there used to be. I mean, again, so many facets to this that we'll find out in a few years if they had an impact or not. That's just one more kind of maybe idea on that.
It seems like a dictatorship would have an easier time with COVID than a democracy. And for a lot of the same reasons, what you're saying, that sort of single decision maker that where you don't have as much collaboration at the top rung, it might be beneficial at a time like this to have that process streamlined. That's a really interesting point that I didn't think about.
Yeah. And then, you know, the Niners, I mean, I'll add this, man, and I'll stop talking. You know, the Niners won the draft award this year. You know, the scouts voted them as the best team. They are the collaboration model. I mean, that's something that I think that Lynch has really prided himself on. Is that going to hurt them now? I don't know. We'll see.
It's interesting. I mean, they collaborate, but at the same time, they've got a strong voice at the top. It doesn't seem to me like there's a lot of ambiguity between John Lynch and Kyle Shanahan and the way that they have their vision for the franchise.
I agree. Yeah, you're right. They've been, I mean, and we've seen it, took them to the Super Bowl, so obviously something's working over there.
All right, let's take a quick break, talk about the SIS Football Rookie Handbook, and then come back with Nate Cooper to talk about some of those scouts.
Sports Info Solutions brings you the second annual edition of the SIS Football Rookie Handbook, with scouting reports and statistical breakdowns on over 280 college football players who are likely to be drafted or signed as rookie free agents in 2020. New features this year include unique and informative NFL team pages, research deep dives by the SIS R&D team, and for the first time ever, the NCAA version of the SIS flagship football statistic, Total Points. At Sports Info Solutions, we collect and analyze college football players like it has never been done before. Whether you're a film junkie, an aspiring analyst, or just looking for the most comprehensive information on what your NFL team's rookies did while they were playing college football, this book has what you are looking for and more. Michael Lombardi, former NFL general manager and three-time Super Bowl winner, said, "This book is the closest fans will get to reading real NFL scouts reports, because it is. Detailed reporting with a complete understanding of what it takes to play in the NFL. Well done." John Park, the manager of research and strategy for the Indianapolis Colts, said, "Scouts matter because not everything that counts can be counted, and relevant data matters since not everything that can be counted counts. With that said, SIS creates relevant football data that matters. Please Check out the SIS Football Rookie Handbook. It is available wherever you get books. You can get it on acta.com, acta.com. You can get it on amazon.com, or you can find it at Barnes & Noble. That's the SIS Football Rookie Handbook, comprehensive scouting and analytics guide, all of the 2020 NFL draft prospects, brought to you by Sports Info Solutions.
All right, coming right back in, Nate, we're talking about the YouTube series that you started up, SIS Film Breakdowns. You're releasing one every day this week at noon. I think today is Thursday as we're talking right now. So that means we just had the fifth out of the first six that'll go up. And who was that fifth one that went up today?
Yeah, the one that just went up as we were talking here was Jalen Reagor, the TCU wide receiver. We've been trying to put out some, you know, at every position, try to break down one guy every position, just to kind of get a wide range of everyone here. And yeah, like you said, we've been putting out one every day this week. Reagor was our fifth one that we put out. Have another one going out tomorrow. And, you know, we still plan on, you know, putting more out next week and as we lead up to the draft to try and get these out there. You know, as scouts and even as fans, we want to be able to see, you know, what really goes on with these guys when we're watching film. Not a lot of people have access to this kind of film. So just being able to go through and break it down and kind of give people an idea of what I'm seeing, hopefully helps some other people out as well.
Yeah, I can't even remember now. How many years have we been running scout school at SIS, the two of us? It must be 4 years now.
I think we did a little bit 4 years ago, but yeah, I think the last 3 years we've been full go with it.
And with John Todd joining us, you know, the main cross checkers on the Football Rookie Handbook. So it's really fun because we get a lot of people that honestly become football video scouts at Sports Info Solutions, I think just because they want to do the scout school aspect of things. And the videos are a little kind of taste of that. You can see a little bit of what's going on in your mind. So let's cycle through these guys. Start back at number one. The first video you put out was on Joe Burrow. No surprise there. My question for you is, as you analyze Joe Burrow, I think me and you maybe saw them a little bit differently. I saw Tua as potentially, just film alone, I liked him a little bit better than Joe Burrow, to be totally honest. All the skills that you see, and when you break down the critical factors, at the end of the day, with the season that Burrow had, and of course, we're not including injuries in our grades, but the grades are going to separate them as it comes to who's going to go first on draft day, at least. What is it for you about Burrow that you think on the field separates him from Tua?
Yeah, I mean, as you know, we graded both of them exactly the same. We just, you know, put Burrow that one rung higher. And it's really hard to, you know, dismiss the season that he had this year. You look at the season he had, it was just ridiculous. You look at his accuracy all over the board, you know, whether it's short, intermediate throws or even deep throws. He's a guy that put the ball on the money when he needed to. Whenever you watch him, you know, he doesn't get fazed by guys that are coming and going to lay a lick on him. He definitely knows what he's going to do, and he doesn't let anything around him, you know, disrupt his fundamentals either. So a lot of what he does definitely is going to translate to the next level, and that's really why we see basically him being the number one pick.
Neil, I'm curious for you. I know you're not trying to come out with all your scouting, your own scouting rookie handbook, but in terms of Burrow, being around that kind of part of the country and seeing what he did this year, do you have concerns about kind of the not as high-end arm talent that you might see from some other quarterbacks, even like a Jordan Love from this year's draft? Does that concern you with a Burrow, or you think this is an all-in, forget about it, no-brainer?
I certainly don't want to dismiss tools in the evaluation process, but I've been obviously more of a software than a hardware kind of guy. The way the game is evolving on the NFL level, it's kind of interesting because we're seeing – offenses go from college to pro instead of pro to college. We're seeing an evolution of technology and style of play going up that way. And I think Burrow's prepared for that game. I think that's, you know, we saw, I guess it was around February that people actually started saying, hey, Kyle Murray, right, really might be a first rounder. Well, he was the first pick in the draft because we're seeing this evolution. I think Burrow doesn't have a rocket arm, but having seen him play enough, I think he's prepared. He's not Kyler Murray when it comes to running and what kind of, but that kind of thing. But he is mobile. I think he makes solid decisions. I think he's got enough arm to where he can be a great player. I think it's hard to dismiss the kind of season he had. I think his skill set works for the modern game, and I think he's a pretty safe pick at number one. Obviously, there's a lot of analysis and overanalysis, but I think it's smart. It'd be better not to overthink this one. To me, he is the number one pick in the draft.
All right, the scouting consensus. Aaron, what can you tell us about Football Outsiders' QB system?
Well, I mean, you know, the risk with Burrow is the same as the risk with Tua, which is the fact that they've only got 2 years of college starting experience, and it still remains that for the most part, for top prospects, it's the guys with 3 and 4 years of college starting experience who've had better NFL careers. But on our historical list of guys with only 1 or 2 years of starting experience, Burrow has the second highest projection of like the last 25 years behind just Alex Smith. And the reason why he's behind Alex Smith is because we dock him a little bit for having such great teammates. But he played a tough schedule being in the SEC. So his projection come out for a guy with only 2 years of experience, his projection comes out really high.
Yeah. And then, so that's interesting because at the quarterback position, historically, you look for more experience. A lot of positions and a lot of, you know, even in basketball, you look at a younger player as more valuable. Right. I know your receiver model looks at that. Is there a concern? I think Burrow's older than Sam Darnold. Is there any concern for that in the way you model him out?
Yeah, I'm not too concerned about that. What I would be concerned about are guys who are overage, like John Beck and Brandon Whedon, guys who are 27, 28. I don't think 24 is that scary. Like, he's still got a lot of room for growth at 24. It's the 27 and 28-year-olds where I think age plays a real issue.
All right, well, we're all on board with that one, and Total Points certainly is as well. He was leaps and bounds ahead of anybody else on the Total Points leaderboard for college football this year. Coop, let's move ahead and talk about the second player you broke down, a little bit of a different player off the beaten path. What can you tell us about Marcus Bailey?
Yeah, Marcus Bailey is a guy that coming into this season could have been, you know, ranked as one of the top linebackers and then ended up having a knee injury after the second week of the season. Was able to, you know, ended up having to miss a lot of the season. Didn't get a really good chance to see him work out at the combine, but he did just post a video a couple days ago with him working out. Looks pretty good. But whenever you watch him on film, I watched a couple games from him last year and then his first two games this year. He's a really rangy guy, plays sideline to sideline. He's really smart. And he definitely is the quarterback of the defense. You see him out there pointing things out, and is definitely a really smart guy to have in the middle of your defense.
You see him fitting in off-ball role, could be Mike, could be Will, some versatility there, or do you think he fits in better one way or another?
He probably fits in better as a Will linebacker. His coverage ability definitely stands out, can play, you know, again, the sideline to sideline ability in the run and the pass game. Fits better as a Will. If you needed him to play Mike for a few downs here and there, he could, but I see him as a Will being able to play in coverage quite a bit.
Good stuff. And then what were the injuries on him again, if you can remind me?
So he had a knee injury, ACL injury this season, and he actually had another one in 2015. So, you know, a couple of knee injuries definitely, you know, hold him back a little bit. But whenever he's healthy, you can definitely see what sparks him on the field.
I haven't watched as much of him as you did. I see, you know, the knee injuries, the athletic Will type prospect. I think people might think a couple years ago to a guy like Jalen Smith that came out. I don't think this is a Jalen Smith type prospect, but it could be a nice player.
I wonder where COVID-19 affects where he was in his ACL rehab.
Yeah, that's definitely a good question. A good thing to bring up. You know, looking at different things online just to get an idea of where he's at. He felt strong, you know, with his process and you know, progressing to getting healthy even before this happened. And with that video that got posted out a few days ago, he's definitely been working out and definitely seems like he's on the right path.
Yeah, that goes back to our conversation with Neil earlier about just how the injuries and the ambiguity, hard to predict how it's going to play in. All right, let's go even more off the beaten path here. Not an injury concern this time, but a player that I think is the sleeper of the SIS Football Rookie Handbook this year. Nate, you kind of teased this one out a little bit earlier, but now you did the full film breakdown of Rodney Clemens. What can you tell us about him?
Yeah, he's a fun player to watch on the back end of the defense there. He's a guy that he supports the run, plays well in the passing zone and man. He can play as a one high or a two high. And he's a guy that, you know, we got a really high grade on him coming in. So I took a look at him and didn't give him as high as a grade that we got, but still graded him really high on a lot of the things that we look for, a lot of the factors that we saw. He's definitely rangy on the back end, and he's a guy that's really smart. Can definitely read and react to the play recognition, route recognition, things like that. Definitely a guy that would fit into this age's safety in the NFL.
Not a guy that ran really fast at the combine. I think he was a low 4.7 guy, but on film, he's a little bit different. Like you mentioned, the range, he's got a smoothness about him to his game and a quickness in short areas that I think is better than that film time. So, we talk about play speed versus that film time. Aaron, we talked about, a will linebacker, a safety prospect. These are two of the positions that are classically very difficult for us to project as analysts. Did you have any thoughts as it pertains to these players, especially an injured guy, a small school guy?
We don't have any projection systems for this. Certainly, I don't have anything from a stat perspective. It just, safeties and off-ball linebackers tend to get drafted later. I mean, that's the only thing is, they're positions you don't want to reach for. But you guys are definitely, I think, very unique in your rating of Clemens, because I'm looking at the Scouts Incorporated top 200, and I'm having a hard time finding him. So I hope you guys are definitely right on this guy. It's, you guys had your guy last year, and it was Nick Needham, and that proved to be right. So this is the guy for this year.
Yeah, we definitely hope that he kind of turns into that Nick Needham type.
The run-of-the-mill scouts are not seeing this guy the way they're not seeing him as strongly as you are.
Yeah, there's been very few, draft sites that even have him ranked. So we're hoping that maybe he's definitely the sleeper. And with us being able to take a look at him and have him in the rookie handbook, hopefully that kind of helps us out a little bit.
The nice thing with him for me is, we talk about safeties needing to be the play on the back end, being able to play in the slot or being able to play in the box. I think this is a player that does all those things a little bit. I like the versatility there to be either in the one high or a two high seam.
That's good for all the teams these days that like to move their guys around.
Got to get positionless. All right, let's flip it around and go to the offensive side of the ball. Nate, what do you have on that side?
Yeah, the offensive lineman that we took a look at was offensive guard Netani Muti from Fresno State. And from the combine, he was the guy that put up the most bench reps, had 44 reps. So definitely, play strength is there. And when you watch him on the film, that's one of the big things. You really see the play strength. You really see the anchor ability. But also with that, to kind of couple with it, he's very rangy. He moves well whenever he pulls, gets out in front. He definitely plays under control. So he's strong, but also a little bit, athletic and rangy as well.
Watching the film, especially as you broke him down on the film breakdown, I think you pulled out some really good plays in there that show you just how much of a flasher this dude is. He flashes athleticism that's just unreal out there. Strength, size, speed, just the sort of freak that you would not want to meet in an alley somewhere. But then you also see the misses. You see it run hot and cold a little bit. You see lack of balance at times to finish plays. So he's one of those guys that, man, you love certain things that he does, and then you hate other things that you see on that film.
But I gather that this guy is more of a projection, of his abilities into the pros rather than his actual performance. Because looking through the rookie handbook, in total points, he's like way behind all of the other guards that you guys have ranked as top guard prospects.
So the other thing to kind of couple with here, going along the injury tags, is talk about a guy that's been injured a lot. This is a guy that's been injured a lot. He's had multiple Achilles injuries, and he only got to play a couple games this past season. Only has one full season under his belt over the past 4 years. So there is a lot of projection with this guy. But as you can see, whenever you actually watch him on the film, whenever he's healthy, he can really be a force.
Can I say, guys, how refreshing it is? We're not sitting here talking about Tua and Henry Ruggs and Jerry Jeudy and all the guys, Jeff Okuda, that aren't going to go in the top five picks. We're talking about guys that I don't even have an opinion on. I mean, that's really refreshing to me as a guy that loves the draft, but loves to hear people going out on a limb on kids that nobody really knows. So,
hey man, you got to have guards and safeties to build your team. You don't build a kid.
That's one of my big things. I love watching the guys that aren't going to go in the first round. I love to be able to pull those guys out in the mid rounds, the late rounds, because the teams are getting those guys as well.
I'm the only guy that loves day three more than day one. So maybe I'm a kindred.
I don't know. I'm there.
Maybe
with
not
you.
The only guy.
Yeah. That's why we do the Football Outsiders top prospects list that we do every year, which is top second and third year guys that were like third day picks. Cause we don't want those third day picks to get forgotten if they don't develop their first year. Cause some of those guys are developing players, right? Mm-hmm. They take 2 or 3 years. Some of the guys, you know, you watch third day this year, especially this year, right? With no rookie minicamps, guys are going to take longer to develop. But you find guys on day three who become starters in their third year, and that's how you build good teams past the quarterback position.
There's a lot of depth in certain positions in this draft, and I do think you're going to be finding some starters there still available on that third day. One position that just has an abundance of depth, and this goes to how much the sevens-on-sevens have been exploding, and like we were talking about earlier, high school is becoming what's being run in college, and what's being run in college becoming what's being run in the NFL. I think we're seeing receivers not needed 3 years to develop like we always used to think they needed, because they come into the league ready to play. Tons of receivers that are going to be available in this draft. But one guy, not the top tier of prospects, but probably right behind your Judy and Lamb and Ruggs type players, Jalen Reagor. Coop, what can you tell us about the speedster?
Yeah, Rager's a guy that, you know, he's a playmaker on the field. You get the ball in his hands, he can do a lot of fun things with it. His quickness in and out of routes is really fun to watch. He has strong hands. He had a pretty high drop rate for us this year, which makes it a little bit tougher to see whenever you're actually looking at the hands. But when you watch him, he can really pluck and snatch the ball out of the air. He's a really, you know, unique prospect. He needs to learn a little bit of an NFL route tree because he runs a lot of curls and things like that in TCU's offense. But just in the routes that he does run, it's a lot of fun to really watch him play.
Yeah, you put in some interesting graphics. I noticed in that film breakdown about what he does and just how often he runs such a limited route tree. Now, he's still been really effective in doing some of those things, and those are important concepts that we're going to ask from the NFL. This is ultimately a guy that's going to be creating space on the field for others based on the way that the defense is going to have to account for him. That said, there have been times when I think you look at Reagor and I question how much I'd want to invest in him in a year where there are so many receivers available. And you did see some inconsistencies on the film sphere in terms of the drops, in terms of, you know, he's one of those guys that'll go snatch it at it sometimes and look like, oh my God, how could anybody ever compete with that player? But then he'll also have those reps where you'll be saying he's fighting the ball a little bit. You wish there was a little bit more kind of versatility in the game. So, kind of interesting when you watch him. He's a player that I think is a little bit more boom bust going on. As we look into him.
Yeah, I can definitely see that. And I really see, you know, that's not just him this year. There's a lot of receivers that you can really talk about in that range with the receiver class that we have this year. You know, the rookie handbook, we have 37 receivers that we're saying can really be a 1 through a 4 at the NFL level. And there's a lot of guys that you probably, you know, might trade taking a guy in the second round for taking a guy in the 4th or 5th round just because of that that depth at this position.
I will say our playmaker score has him 5th, which is the same rate, same rank that you have him in the rookie handbook.
Any differences in your top 4 from what we have?
We have CeeDee Lamb 1 and Judy 2, which is opposite of what you have. But we both have Jefferson 3rd from LSU. We both have Henry Ruggs 4th from Alabama, and we both have Reagor 5th.
That's fascinating because that's a pure analytic metric on your side and a pure scouting grade on our side, and they're coming out basically the same way. We have a tie grade for those top 2 guys. You stick me with Judy or CeeDee Lamb, I'm not having any problem there. All right, Neil, you want to go back to talking about the big guys, don't you?
No, I'm loving it, man. I just get here to listen to you guys talk. It's awesome.
Stay tuned for tomorrow. We have a defensive lineman coming tomorrow. So,
all right. Thank you so much, guys. That was a really awesome conversation. Thanks to our listeners for always supporting the podcast and for staying safe these days. Neil Stratton from Inside the League, please keep it up. Stay safe. What you do for the league and what you do just for the scouting community, the players themselves, the families. I know everybody appreciates it, and nobody thanks you enough. So thank you for everything that you do. Nate Cooper. We're going to keep checking in to the YouTube channel, the SIS Film Breakdowns. Keep pumping them out because I'm loving watching them. And Aaron, We will be back next week doing the same thing with Justin that we always do and diving a little bit deeper on this draft as we continue the lockdown.
We're almost there, man. We're almost there. Months of preparation to actually put these guys on teams. We're almost there.
And as a reminder, you can get the 2020 SIS Football Rookie Handbook, Comprehensive Scouting and Analytics Guide, featuring tons of reports from guys like Nate Cooper. It's available on actasports.com, actasports.com, and on Amazon. They're still delivering them and delivering them fast. We are also recruiting. Sports Info Solutions has begun our recruiting. We're interviewing 2020 football video scouts. We're planning as if we're going to be starting on time and going ahead. So if you are interested, please head to the career section of our website, sportsinfosolutions.com. And we will get out of here and be back next week for my co-host Aaron Schatz, our guests Neil Stratton and Nathan Cooper, and our producer Justin Stein. I'm Matt Manicharian, and thank you for joining us for the latest episode of the Off the Charts Football Podcast.